some football.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Welcome to the FTN DataCast, the fantasy football podcast where data drives the discussion. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Tyler Lochner.
Welcome back, everybody. This is the FTN DataCast presented by the FTN Network. Adam Pfeiffer here on Thursday, June the 8th. I believe you'll be listening to this on the 9th, however. Talking some best ball. And every year when I start to do some best ball podcasts, there's one person I have to bring on. It's Pat Corain, who is now with Legendary Upside, the site he started. I want him to talk all about it. I don't know the exact date. I was going to say, oh, he started it this date, but I don't have the exact date. But Pat started Legendary Upside. If you have been paying attention, he may have had a decent year in best ball. He can talk about that. But Pat, appreciate the time as always. How are you doing? And please take the next handful of minutes to talk about everything you're doing at Legendary Upside, because it's obviously, some fantastic work.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. Yeah, I started Legendary Upside. I don't know the exact date either, but it was sometime in mid-March, and doing a lot of Dynasty-focused content there. Did a lot of rookie write-ups. Just launched Dynasty rankings, overall rankings today in collaboration with Jacob Sanderson and Davis Maddock. Excited about that. But also a lot of best ball content as well. Right now, a lot of strategy pieces that I've published on the site, including a really in-depth one earlier this week on kind of late round philosophy. I've got another post that'll probably be out by the time you're listening to this, on kind of a shorter piece on, and that's a free article, that is on kind of like a tactic that I'm using in terms of my quarterback selection. If you're near one of the turns, specifically if you're on the front half of the board right now, but it works on kind of a number of different turns. So kind of wrote that one up quickly, and you can check that out by subscribing to the newsletter for free. Also have best ball ranks that you can upload to Underdog and DraftKings if you're a premium member. So yeah, just doing a lot of good content over there. And it's been nice because I've been able to kind of ramp things up, added DraftKings rankings last week, added the Dynasty rankings this week. And I'll be doing a lot of, kind of traditional fantasy football type of analysis throughout the summer, including the article that gave the site its name, the Legendary Running Back Series, where I look at the running backs in the early rounds and identify the ones that I think can turn in one of these massive league winning type of years.
Yeah. And you have a podcast too, correct?
Yeah, that's right. And I also, so I have a regular podcast, so you can find that anywhere.
Yeah, you do a lot.
Legendary Upside. Yeah, but I also do narrate the articles as well. So if you are...
how do you enjoy that? Because I did that last year. For FTN, I do a full like 20 plus thousand word game by game article for each week, breaking out every game. And I do an audio podcast for that too. And it's like, it takes a while to get used to, I feel like. But once you do it, it's like... And I also forget the power of editing. So like the first four times I did it, I just would not take a sip of water just because I didn't want to like have a, dead air. But then I realized I can edit.
Yeah. No, I was hoping to like not really have to edit it too much, but I do. I can like read a few paragraphs in a row and then I'll say a word wrong and I'll stop and I'll start again. Or I will just like, kind of run out of steam and need to take a drink of water or something. But I edit out loud. So... my final pass on an article, I was always reading it out loud anyway.
Right.
And so it hasn't added like that much time. It probably makes that final process like twice as long. So if it's a long article, it might add, an hour or something to the total amount of time. But I like it as a perk for the premium subscribers because that's how I am. Like I'd much rather listen to an article than read it right now. It's just so much easier to fit in the time.
Yeah, and I've recently, the past couple of years, have learned that too. Like, not everybody, takes content in the same way. So, I listen to a ton of podcasts, but if I'm, like, in terms of an article or a book, I would probably rather just read it, but there's people that do both. And I've been doing a lot more of that kind of, like, pairing articles with podcasts or just, kind of you know, reading them out loud. So yeah, make sure you check out all Pat's work at Legendary Upside, the podcast, you know, Ship Chasing. He's on with Pete Overzet and Ben Gretsch, and that's always fun and great stuff. And yeah, this is pretty much like the best ball breakdown. No real set type of agenda, but like obviously there's things that you have to talk about with best ball, and it's always great to have you on because for me, like best ball, like I do a lot of best ball drafts, they're a ton of fun. But my strength is player analysis, you know, breaking down teams, schemes, all that stuff. And strategy, like with best ball, it can be tough because there's a lot of different ways to go about it. Obviously, we've seen the past couple of seasons, and I feel like it's especially evident this year, is just wide receiver heavy. I feel like I'm getting to the point where a lot of my drafts, Pat, where it's like, there's running back value now, like for days. So it even adds more incentive, I think, to go wide receiver early. But, talk about some of the things that you've kind of taken away from the start here of best ball season. Again, a lot's going to change. That's always why drafting at certain, time periods of the offseason is interesting, especially with the news we got today, which we were kind of expecting, Dalvin Cook being released. Those teams that were drafting Madison, it's not like he was going like crazy late because this has been kind of in the works for a while, but still those teams that drafted Madison, seven, eight, ninth round, perhaps those teams have, a much higher chance, I would say, of advancing than a lot of the teams that are going to have to start drafting him in the fourth, fifth round.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And the Madison one's been kind of interesting because I had assumed that was like kind of mostly baked in. But right. The reaction today has been,
yeah,
I've seen people talk about him in the third round, and that seems like kind of insane to me.
I think I literally saw a draft where he went in the third round,
yeah, and it was like
the ETN tier, and he went like at the top of that tier.
Yeah, I mean, running back talent, I think, matters mm-hmm. like a fair amount, and not to say that Madison's like not talented at all, but he's been like, I don't know, like he's kind of the Jamal Williams-y, David Montgomery type of guy in my mind. I don't view him.
I mean, he plays the Lions twice a year, so that works. Like two of his like six massive games came against Detroit. Two of them came against Seattle. So yeah. It's like, I don't know. But third round, like I just updated my redraft ranks. I'm like low RB20 range. Like, and that's like, I don't know if they're done. Like there's still free agent running backs out there. And I don't know that, like, I agree. Like that feels like, I don't want to say absurd, but close to it.
I think that, playing to win these tournaments is really important, right? Like you have to play for the specific type of tournament you're in. So a lot of the stuff that I tend to think about is, I tend to play a lot of the playoff style best ball tournaments. That's like where a lot of my focus is right now. The stuff you found on DraftKings, Best Ball Mania 4, those types of tournaments are where I'm putting a lot of my attention. If you're, putting a portfolio together of kind of traditional best ball leagues, or even if you're playing maybe more in a total points type of contest like drafters, maybe some of this applies a little bit less. But just for those like tournament type of best ball tournaments, I mean, you have to, or for those playoff style tournaments, I mean, you do really want to think through those final weeks. And to me, guys who I'm like, I don't know how talented this guy is, I'm getting the worst price of anyone in the tournament, perhaps, because it's actually possible that his ADP spikes higher now than it will ultimately settle, because there will be additional injuries. There will be kind of other kind of value guys that open up. They could end up signing someone. They probably won't. I doubt they will, but we could get buzz that they really like Ty Chandler or whatever. So it wouldn't shock me if he like went into the early fourth. I mean, that kind of would shock me, but if that's what you're saying he's kind of jumping up to, then sure. And then maybe he ends up actually kind of falling a bit from that point when the enthusiasm dies down a little bit. So it's just like, man, you're paying top dollar. You're getting a guy who's really just kind of a classic dead zone volume projection. And I'm not going to argue against that volume projection for week one or week five or whatever. But when you get into the playoffs, that talent question is going to matter a lot more, because they're going to have the whole season to evaluate. Okay, is this guy really capable of handling the backfield the way we thought he was. And again, not to say Madison doesn't have any talent, but he wasn't a particularly strong prospect. He has been a backup his entire career so far. It seems more like they think Dalvin Cook is kind of done, and a lot of the numbers would back that up.
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't want to kind of continue on with this contract extension. And so Madison's kind of like, hey, this guy can do it. We don't need to be paying Dalvin Cook. It's not, so I don't know.
Well, here's the other thing too.
Alexander Madison, but it's just,
when situations like this, when situations like this happen, like I always feel like when DeAndre Swift was traded to the Philadelphia Eagles, I was of the belief like everybody's like so high on this move. Like, oh, Swift's on this loaded offense, this elite offensive line. And it's like, I looked at it as the situation's not even that dissimilar to Detroit. It's just a better offense. Like he's not going to get, more than like 12, 15 touches per game. He's not getting goal line work. The offensive line, yes, the Eagles, I would say, are the best, but Detroit's like top five. The only difference I thought that I saw from that situation was he might catch fewer passes, which has been helping him. And in this situation, I'm looking at it like everybody's looking at, oh, Madison could be 18 to 22 touches per game. He could be a really good running back. I'm looking at it as I want to draft more Jordan Addison. I want to draft more Justin Jefferson. Not that, if you don't have the first pick or second pick, probably not. I think we'd all have to draft Jordan,
really,
But I want to draft more Jordan Addison, maybe TJ Hockenson, because the Vikings last season alone with Kevin O'Connell coming in, they were fourth in neutral script passing rate at 64%. They were, I believe, fourth as well. Fourth in passing rate on early downs at almost 59%. Like, they might just lean even more on that. Like, that just makes me like, the ADP, I feel like, at least now, of Jordan Addison, who's already, we've seen his ADP kind of skyrocket over the summer. There's been hype around him. But, like, I wish there was one more player. I mean, maybe it could be KJ Osborne that was actually, like, a value in drafts for Minnesota's passing attack. But obviously, then you can just go to the pivot of Ty Chandler, Dwayne McBride, who, I mean, McBride, like McBride is definitely a higher end prospect than Madison was. So, like, there's no reason he can't be the leading running back.
Well, Madison did have draft capital behind him.
Yeah.
And I think McBride's a true dart throw right now. I'm kind of leaning more towards Chandler at the moment because I've heard them mention his name a bunch. And I like have not heard anything about McBride really since he was drafted. So I like McBride as a two down guy, but he's like a pure two down guy.
Yeah. I just feel like it makes more sense to just take shots on Chandler McBride than take Madison now that his ADP is coming up. But like that's why best ball is so interesting, because there's so many different thought processes. So kind of leading with that, like what are some of the things that you've kind of noticed in a lot of the drafts? I'm sure you've done hundreds at this point already, and it's only the middle of June, but like what are some things, again, I kind of talked about, it's been pretty evident the past couple of seasons, but I feel like it's especially evident now with just the wide receiver runs. I mean, you get to the third round and like the best wide receiver available, not that, bad players, but like you get to the point where it's like you get to that third round, it's like, oh, you're choosing between like, do you take a shot on Hopkins right now, not knowing what team he's on? Like Calvin Ridley, who, like, it's always so interesting to kind of compare the best ball ADPs and the home league redraft ADPs, because Calvin Ridley's not going the third round in most home leagues, but the wide receivers get pushed up. So I'm sure you'll talk about that. But what are some other things you've kind of noticed so far in the process?
I mean, I do think the wide receiver point's worth reiterating, because it's so interesting, right? Like, underdog is the most wide receiver heavy ADP, like across kind of any platform. And it's a half PPR format, but it's these, it's made up of kind of these it's people who consume a lot of content and do a lot of drafts over on underdog. And I actually think the ADP is pretty sharp, even for the half PPR format, to be kind of hammering the wide receivers, because it creates a situation where, yeah, there's value at other positions, especially running back. That's like undeniable. It creates value at running back when everyone's hammering wide receiver that hard. But it also really punishes teams for being gluttons in scooping that value. So if you go out and you get like four, early picks that are not wide receivers, if you get like three running backs and an elite quarterback, there are no wide receivers left. It becomes like really difficult to find any kind of wide receivers that are going to be able to just like create a productive best ball lineup for you. I imagine that the wide receiver ADP, like it's possible for sure that the wide receiver ADP is now so aggressive that teams that build to just scoop that value and hit on the right guys, you know, maybe like a Rondale Moore, or, you know, you pick one of the Giants wide receivers and get that right. Like a Van Jefferson or something becomes like a consistent, you know, but it's, those names probably didn't excite you, and for good reason, you know, or maybe Nico Collins is like a true.
Collins actually excites target. Me a tiny bit.
Yeah. But those are,
but not as your wide receiver three.
Exactly. And, or like Juju Smith-Schuster, you know, like that, that type of thing.
That's the range too. I get to that range. Like most of the drafts I've already pretty much, you know, gone crazy at wide receiver, but like once that range hits, like the Juju Smith-Schuster, Alan Lazard, Tyler Boyd range, I'm like, yikes. Like that's not fun. Yeah, it's not fun.
And I'm sometimes thinking about one of those guys as a wide receiver five, but I don't want them to be my wide receiver four. That's like a real, and I don't love it as my wide receiver five, but that's the kind of rooms that you tend to be in on underdog right now. And because wide receivers have pushed up so much, I think if you, you know, are just kind of sitting in the draft and just letting it fall to you, you're probably getting one early running back at least, maybe two. The tight ends are also falling a lot right now. I'm getting a lot of the tight ends in the sixth round, guys who I think are like elite tight end picks.
I have way more Kyle Pitts than I thought I would by this point of the season.
I have a lot of Kyle Pitts. Yeah, traditionally those guys cost a pick in the top five rounds, and you can get Goddard, you can get Pitts, you can sometimes get Kittle in round six. And I think that's pretty great. So that's another reason, though, that I'm like, all right, if I know the pretty clearly I can get a tight end in a lot of these drafts in round six, which is a strategy that I want to be overweight on. I wrote about that on Legendary Upside. I think elite tight end is getting like almost misunderstood in terms of like even what you're trying to accomplish. Like George Kittle last year crushed in the playoffs.
Yeah, I was going to say he had like ridiculous, like it gets overshadowed because Kelsey was Kelsey and Hockenson was like right behind Kelsey after he got traded. But like Kittle had monster, like they weren't just like 4 for 60 touchdowns. They were like monster games.
Yeah, and like you obviously had to get extremely lucky for him to do that in those weeks. But you had last year we had Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle each have three spike weeks in half PPR scoring. And that accounted for almost half of the total spike weeks at the position.
Wow.
Hockenson had another two that I think there were 22 spike weeks in total off the top of my head. And this is all in the article on the site, but with the addition of Hockenson, who wasn't an elite tight end in terms of ADP, but was drafted early, he was drafted in the, you know, the single digit rounds. Those four players accounted for half of the spike weeks last year at the tight end position. So it's like, yes, you need to get really lucky. You know, the Mark Andrews drafters, man, if they had gotten Mark Andrews outburst in the fantasy playoffs, things would be different. But it's this thing where there's probably like only one tight end who goes off in the fantasy playoffs this year. There's Case potentially none. Exactly. There's potentially none, but there's a decent chance there is one across a 3 week sprint, you know, cause it would be even more powerful if Kittle had done what he did in week 17 instead of in weeks 15 and 16. But the guys who are really plausible to produce a multi-week production spike are the elites. Guess what? The fact that the position is generally a wasteland is good if you end up having the one guy who does have that production spike, because no one else, you're not competing against anything else. You're competing against a low scoring position and you have this massive leverage. So I think that's, you know, something that's getting a little overlooked right now with these tight end prices. They're down a lot from last year. Outside of Kelsey, Hayden Winks has shown this, that tight ends 2 through 5 are like down considerably from last year.
I think it's I literally think it's just the conception of, oh, I don't have Kelsey, so why would I draft a tight end 2 through 7 when they won't clump close to Kelsey anyway? I'll just wait. But it's like, this is different from drafting a tight end and waiting in a home league where you're just trying to beat 11 other teams. It's completely different.
Exactly.
Like you can wait at the end of your home league draft and just draft, I don't know, you know, Pat Freiermuth or whoever, and just say, okay, I'll get 8 points a week. But this is like, it's very rare that you're going to find a tight end in the, you know, 10 to 12 range, probably even higher than that, that even has a chance of having, like, the tight ends that have the chance of spike weeks, like you mentioned, obviously Kelsey, Andrews, Hockenson, Kittle, Kyle Pitts, I think absolutely does, especially because if he gets back to his rookie season usage where he was playing out wide and they were almost using him as a wide receiver, he has that upside. Goddard, I struggle with because I freaking love him as a player, but he has gotten like 4 end zone targets the last couple of years. Like, he has been the odd man out in that area, but his efficiency makes up for it because he can have as many 70-yard games at least for a tight end.
And I mean, if A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith would have
right.
missed games.
And then we saw the opposite last year where Goddard was out and Devontae Smith took off. So like right. if Devontae Smith was out and, you know, Goddard could easily not do what Devontae Smith did, but yeah, I think the more I've been drafting, because I'm
Waller
still
has a ceiling too. I think
yeah, I was gonna say Waller. There was, you know, Waller's going to lead that team in targets pretty easily, and I'm a huge Brian Daboll guy. I've been starting to do a better job of like understanding. Okay, maybe I didn't get Kelce, maybe I didn't get Andrews, but I'm not drafting for 7 points a week for my tight end. Like, I'm not trying to beat 11 teams. I'm trying to beat hundreds of teams.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are other ways to do this. Hayden Winks has been kind of pounding the table for going with the late round tight ends. Zach.
And you just draft like 3 of them?
Yeah, or Dan Zach's been drafting 4 and 5 tight ends. Poker player of the year, Dan Zach. He, I mean, pretty interesting. He'll even go, I think the 5 tight ends is generally reserved for DraftKings. We have 20 picks, but
yeah.
If you're not spending anything at the position, and you're just kind of like mining for like a breakout type of guy, you know, I don't mind that. And I think especially this time of year, when you try to guess like the Vikings backup, you could be completely wrong and create a dead roster spot, you know, like right. Dwayne McBride, right? You're mixing him in. It's possible he's a healthy scratch. It's possible he's a practice squad
player. I mean, I was drafting Chris Evans a lot last year, so.
Exactly. Right. I drafted a ton of Chris Evans too. Dead roster spot. We're going to have a lot of dead roster spots. We're going to be wrong on a lot of these, but these backfields in particular. And I'm pretty sure Kate Otten is going to play a lot of snaps this year, you know? And Kate
yeah,
Otten
he was like, he was literally guy, an every down player when Cameron Brait was out, like literally. And like at that point, like you're just looking for routes anyway. And like, so this is actually like routes, rookie tight ends. We know historically don't do much for fantasy. But like, if you are taking if there was ever a year where they actually might, like I talked about this after the NFL draft, like we had a lot of really good tight end landing spots for year one. Like Kincaid's ADP is pretty high. I think it's, you know, I don't even know if I've drafted him yet, despite how much I love the Bills. But like Michael Mayer, I just wrote about the Raiders. Like McDaniels has gone away from the 2 tight end sets. I actually ran 12 personnel at the lowest rate in football last year. So if he just beats out Austin Hooper and OJ Howard, he'll be on the field a lot. Like we saw Foster Moreau was an every down player when Waller was out. Now he didn't have massive games, obviously, but like there's opportunities for him, Laporta, the Green Bay tight ends. Like there's actually good landing spots for rookie tight ends. So if you were to go that route of just taking 3, maybe 4 late round players, like again, it seems unlikely because of the position and what we've seen historically, but I think there's as good of a chance as we've seen from a lot of the tight ends from the rookie class to actually be more productive, but just based off opportunity and landing spot.
I agree. I also think that when you look at what happened with last year's rookie tight end class, you know, we did start to see, I just remember from playing in like some of the high stakes leagues where we're scrambling around on the waiver wire trying to find like bodies. Mm-hmm. And I forget who our tight end was, but we lost our tight end to injury. And it was Kyle Pitts actually. And so then we were just like trying to scramble and find tight end production for the rest of the year. And you're looking at, okay, Jelani Woods is starting to make a little noise. We could go with Chigakonkwo. We could go with Trey McBride, you know, and all of these guys were starting to get more playing time. And then McBride ended up having that huge week 17 game. Liam Murphy won a tournament on the back of that performance. I think that if you're just looking at who can spike for me in the final weeks of this season, some of those rookie tight ends are actually pretty appealing.
Yeah.
So I think if you're building tight end rooms that are like 3 and 4 of, you know, the late round guys, including the rookies, you know, Michael Mayer, who, yeah, could be an every down tight end for the Raiders to close this year. That could be really powerful. The other thing you can do is if you have a Kyle Pitts, you can pretty easily, I think, still add, especially because you're getting Kyle Pitts in the 6th. Maybe a little different if you're paying like 3rd round prices for what we expect Kyle Pitts to be, but you're not. And if you tack on like Michael Mayer and Hunter Henry,
I like the Dallas tight ends too. I think the Dallas tight ends are overlooked because there's three of them, so it obviously muddies things up. But like, if one of those tight ends, whether it's Ferguson, Hendershot, whoever, like one, if one of those tight ends can emerge, like Dalton Schultz was super productive, not because he's talented, because he was good at finding the soft spot in zone coverage. Like that's like
right.
Ferguson can do that. Like, I think that's interesting if you're in that like 3-4 build, because is it likely that one of them kind of emerges ahead of the other and just takes over? I don't think so. But if it happens, like that player could be really productive in that offense. Granted, it's a different offense and Mike McCarthy wants to run the ball 78 times, but
well,
there's players.
I'm not really drafting Ferguson much right now or Schoonmaker, because there's guys who like Otten who are just like the starter. Like,
yeah.
Cameron Brate is not there. Kyle Rudolph is not there. They have like a bunch of like rookies behind this guy, and they're talking about him with like what a great veteran leader he is. He's entering his second season in the NFL. You know, like it's his room. And I mean, I expect Kate Otten to do like not very much this year in terms of actual fantasy production, but I'm not going to be like wrong. I mean, it's football, so anything can happen, but I feel pretty confident that I'm getting an actual starting NFL tight end.
He's tight end 35 right now. Like,
yeah, and it's my last round pick, and I can just get that, you know, and Hunter Henry, I think, offers Tyler Conklin another kind of similar bet. Like, Tyler Conklin's the guy there, right? Like, that's not in question. What I think with the Dallas tight end room, and I'm thinking about this a lot with these running back situations as well. This is one of the things I touched on in an article this week, is that I've been trying to think through this leverage question, right? Like we talk sometimes in these best ball tournaments about how if you scroll down the list, like, and you draft a guy who's not currently being drafted a lot, it gives you an opportunity to have leverage on the rest of the field and get it at a price that no one else is going to have it, right? Like if you hit on, let's say you're drafting Zamir White, okay, and Josh Jacobs like holds out, refuses to play for the Raiders, and by the end of the draft season, Zamir White's like rocketed up in ADP because like it's a Le'Veon Bell situation with Josh Jacobs or whatever, okay? So you're like, man, by not only do I have this amazing price on Zamir White, but I also, against all the other early drafting teams, I'm like one of the few guys with Zamir White. So it's not even like I have this great price on Zamir White, but there's very little cheap Zamir White even in the player pool. I've got, you know, so that's like an appealing thing, right? But the issue is that you are potentially creating dead roster spots when you take those big swings in these early drafts. And that's one thing that Mike Leone pointed out in his Best Ball Manifesto, Establish Your Run, that this is the time where we create a lot more dead roster spots just naturally because there's injuries to come. There are depth charts that we're pretty sure we're getting right and we just aren't. You know what I mean? Like, what if the Eagles won? We have that like just completely wrong about who's actually getting touches there. You know, there's a number of backfields where we could just like be incorrect about who the starter is, about who the number two is, you know? So we're just going to, and injuries, I mean, you can't really understate how chaotic that will get. Obviously, yep. There's guys now with Dalvin Cook out there who haven't signed yet. I mean, there's a lot of chaos to come. And that chaos will hit our lineups and do damage to these early best ball teams. I'm like a little nervous about, you know, okay, if I take these big home run swings on guys, I'm going to guess right. I'm going to pick right in this really murky situation. Most of the time I'm creating a dead roster spot. And it's kind of like, hey, what happened in draft like you're right? You know, if I'm right, if I've already nailed a bunch of these picks, why am I like fishing around, like looking for this home run in a part of the draft where we know my chances of actually finding it are going to be quite low? I don't think it's like necessarily bad to do it, but I don't want it to maybe be like my primary mode right now. What I'm thinking about instead is when we know who the number two is in Minnesota, right? When training camp preseason snaps, when we know it, like it's not like just this murky projection, but we're like, no, they rested Ty Chandler with the starters. Like Dwayne McBride played like two quarters. He is a full blown like fourth stringer.
I'm gonna have then, PTSD by the way for preseason because of Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, well, sure. Yeah, we won't get everything right, but
that,
I think
that was point, definitely rare though. That instance was rare,
right? But at that point, I want to be, and again, I'm talking more about like the number two type of,
right?
Like, what are these depth charts? Who is number two on the depth chart in on all 32 teams? That is when I'm thinking about attacking and trying to get leverage where, okay, now I actually know things. I know for a fact that, you know, let's say Kenny Nwangwu, I don't know why I picked that name so they can't pronounce it, but Kenny Nwangwu is not being drafted. Like, it's not that he's not being drafted. It's that I know he hasn't been drafted. He wasn't being drafted. That is a fact.
Yeah.
And I can look back at those early drafts. Those early drafts are going to have a chance to get huge values on guys like Alexander Mattison, right? You're going to see crazy values on some of the rookie wide receivers and, you know, the best Anthony Richardson prices and all of that, right? They have an advantage, that early drafting window, once we get to the playoffs, they have an advantage over the late round, sorry, the late season drafts in those playoff pods. But you actually have the chance later in the summer to go, I have a lot more information than you, and I'm going to specifically target guys who are going undrafted in the early part of drafts, in the early part of this Best Ball Mania window or the DK Millie window, whatever. And now I'm not guessing, right? You're still kind of guessing, but you're not like completely guessing. And you're going to be able to get that leverage without risking as much in terms of dead roster spots. So that's kind of, I think, going to be my plan. My primary.
It's like before the preseason, like you're looking at one of those jars and you have to guess how many pieces of candy. It's like you're guessing there, but you have a decent idea. But then take the preseason. It's like you actually have, they gave you like an actual number, like where it's close to. That's kind of what the preseason's like, gives you a little bit more than just a flat out crazy guess.
And it's one reason to break ties, I think, toward that extra tight end, right? Like,
yeah.
And part of me feels like maybe these tight ends, they're not going, these prices aren't going to stick. And it's like, well, how wouldn't they stick? Like, we're not going to get any more excited about Kate Otten, right? But I think one way that these prices don't stick is that some guys get hurt. You know, it's like, well, now like a situation that was very obvious is murky, you know, like if Freiermuth misses time or whatever, like what are we doing in the steel with the Steelers? I have no interest in whoever the Steelers backup tight end would be. It's a crowded situation. I don't like the offense. Not excited about Kenny Pickett. The only reason I like Freiermuth is because I like Freiermuth. And if he's gone or, you know, we lose any number of other tight ends, we kind of feel similarly about, then it's like, well, there aren't that many tight ends. There's only 27 tight ends I want to draft. And so I'm not going to let starters just be completely free anymore. So, you know, I think maybe you're banking probably very small kind of closing line value wins if you take an extra tight end. But I am doing some of the thing where I'll take elite and then tack on two very late.
Yeah. I think that's why best ball is so fun to me, because like you can literally not only – like go in, it's tough to go into a draft with a set strategy because so much is going to change, but like there's so many different ways to just pivot off the path while you're in the draft. It's so fun to me. Any other things that you've seen so far they want to talk about before I want to get your take on some kind of players that you like, you know, in terms of value or not? And then I always think with best ball too, it's always interesting with like kind of like these post-hype players and teams, because last year for certain players and teams were hyped up and they were going early, and now we're at points where some of these players and teams aren't even being discussed for the most part. And with so many different changes in scheme and offense, like there's clearly opportunities for value. So any other things you want to discuss from takeaways before we get into that? Anything you're extra passionate about?
The quarterback situation is kind of interesting just in terms of the prices. Sure. They were so expensive to begin draft season. I thought in the kind of pre-NFL draft period that the best move was just to not draft the elites. And I didn't draft a lot of them because I just,
the problem is the elites have been like absurdly elite. So it's like you want
no, I'd obviously massive love to have
fantasy
them.
Points. It's yeah, weird, but because like you would go the whole last couple of years like, oh, just wait at quarterback. But then like Mahomes and Josh Allen and Lamar in his prime when he's healthy and Hurts are all posting like absurd production.
I would recommend an article that Sam Hoppen had out at 4 for 4, and he looked at last year's results, but then simulated out the ADP from last year by. What he did was he kind of would take the quarterbacks and give them a second round ADP.
Okay.
And then use last year's ADP to kind of simulate out different teams and kind of replace that quarterback selection with, replace the player they'd actually had with someone that was available in the third round. So they're kind of, it's a 2v2 type of thing where he's moving their quarterbacks up from where they were actually taken into the second round, and then seeing how these teams are now doing, kind of simulating that out. And the advance rates dropped significantly, even with last year's results, which was an awesome year for the elite quarterback. So essentially, that article I found fairly convincing that when you're drafting these quarterbacks in the second round, you could argue that it's efficient because it's not like the teams were turning out horribly, but you're not necessarily gaining like a real edge when they're in the second round. That's like a lot of opportunity cost.
Yeah.
I think last year was a fairly good year for second round picks. So maybe that's, you know, that study is kind of overstating the opportunity cost effect. You know, maybe this year the third round ends up being great and the second round's not so great. And so who cares if you took a second round quarterback instead of a third round quarterback? But I do think that there is a real opportunity cost question here. And it's also interesting now because the quarterbacks are falling. So how far are they going to fall? Like, is it possible they fall all the way to kind of the 3-4 turn? Because that would kind of open up some interesting possibilities.
Yeah. It's always tough with quarterback ADP in best ball because everybody wants to kind of complete the stack. So like you'll see teams reach for whoever to get the stack at times. But yeah,
that's one of the things that's been driving the fall in some ways though, is that he was one of the first guys to start falling because you had all these guys that were like, I don't know what these teams look like because I didn't have any of them, but they're like drafting Burrow in the early fourth round to pair with who? Not Jamar Chase, not T. Higgins, right? So I guess you're just like hoping you get Tyler Boyd and Irv Smith later, yeah. And then you tack on like a Sky Moore bring back or something. But it was like he was going kind of in a pocket of the draft where he was unlikely to be paired with Kelsey even as a bring back. So I didn't really get that one. And the market has corrected. He's now going to, you know, he's falling to the 4-5 turn where Higgins and Chase are. And it just makes so much more sense. But I think that effect has helped drive down the cost on Mahomes a little bit. Cause it's like, hey, if I've got Jamar Chase, I can grab T. Higgins and then I can play for Burrow. And, you know, maybe you don't even have T. Higgins, but the guy at the 101 spot has T. Higgins. So you have him blocked in the fourth round on Burrow. Do you want Burrow at the 4-11? You're going to get him. Why would you take Mahomes, even if he comes back to you in the third?
Yeah.
If you feel confident that you can get Burrow at the 4-11, and I feel like confidence is growing as these quarterback prices drop. So I think it kind of builds on itself a little bit. It's something I'm really keeping an eye on right now, if these quarterbacks are going to keep slipping. Because, look, if they slip enough, that all of a sudden they become massive edges again. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to, as a market, I think, trying to dial this in. And it makes sense why we would be pricing these guys up higher than last year. It was a huge edge to have an elite quarterback last year. But I think maybe we went a little too far and now we're correcting. And I'm just really curious to see how things settle in kind of their final form.
Yeah. And I think what helped with obviously like Mahomes, Hurts, Josh Allen, Fields, they were fantastic. But like Lamar missing time didn't help, or it helped, I guess, propel those quarterbacks. Herbert's touchdown rate was like ridiculously low. So his overall production was down. You know, some other stuff happened, but
well, yeah, overall didn't play in the final week, and
yeah,
Burrow and Allen didn't have a game that counted. So there, we could have a even higher view of you know how important these elite quarterbacks are. Had a couple things shaken out differently, like very easily, we could be like, you have to have an elite quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, that could be the narrative. So I do want to be. I'm kind of delighted that they're starting to fall a little bit because I don't want to have my portfolio be underweight on these elites. But I was also like really having sticker shock with these second round prices. I was starting to mix them in a bit because I didn't have really much before the NFL draft. And I was like, then, you know, post the NFL draft, the prices were like staying right where they were before the draft. So I was like, all right, I guess I got to get on board a little bit. But with them falling now, I think it's going to make things a little bit more fun.
All right, let's get into some teams and players here, Pat. You know, I'm doing a lot of analysis right now on coaching, coordinating schemes and stuff like that. So there's been a lot of players I've just by writing and doing research, just getting really, really excited about. But it can be, honestly, it can be players in the second round, third round, eighth round, overall players that you seem to just kind of be gravitating towards and maybe even teams too. in that kind of same discussion about, you know, teams that you think could, you know, we obviously, it's going to be difficult, but we're obviously looking for the situation like the Eagles last year, where that's the offense that you kind of had to have. And Jalen Hurts was amazing. Devonta Smith was amazing. AJ Brown was amazing. Even Miles Sanders was really good. And then Goddard, when he's on the field, was really good. Like, players, values, teams that are really, catching your eye this offseason.
Well, so one thing that I'm, a little bit nervous about right now is where's Dalvin Cook going to land? Because there are rumors he could land on the Jets, and that would really hurt me.
As somebody that traded away Breece Hall in Dynasty, I'm not I'm not an idiot. It was a part of a Bijan trade. So, but I wouldn't mind that.
just to spite the guy you traded with?
100%. happened to me when I traded James Robinson after his rookie season. He literally texted me when Etienne got drafted and just put, "You son of a bitch."
I might have to text you if Dalvin Cook signs with the Jets now, but I've drafted a lot of Breece Hall. He's a guy where, you know, I think the market clearly views Javonte Williams and Breece Hall differently. Hall had much more of kind of a clean ACL tear, from what I understand, compared to Javonte Williams. But I also think that Hall flashed like elite upside and, you know, the ability to handle a big workload and perform very efficiently on that workload and have a workload that includes receiving usage, not just rushing work, now gets a big upgrade to the offense. I mean, even if Rodgers is like done, he's still a huge upgrade to this offense. And, you know, just an offense that should be scoring more points. Like, I could see maybe, you know, we look back and we're like, wow, we were kind of getting out over our skis on Garrett Wilson. You know, it turns out Rodgers is like an old man and, you know, the offense disappoints. But even then, I would still probably feel okay about Breece Hall.
Listen, we were at a point last year where we were praying that Mike White was playing. So
exactly.
I think they'll be fine.
Yeah. So if Hall's healthy and they don't sign like a Cook or something, I just think he has massive upside. He kind of checks all the boxes for me in that legendary upside analysis that I talked about before.
Yeah.
He's really young. He was super efficient. He was a great prospect. He's got the versatility. So to get him right now, wherever you want, almost in the third round, like if you're just like, no matter what, I'm taking Breece Hall in the third round, you could do it. Even if you have like the 111, there's a good chance he'll be there at 311. And I'm just like, man, I mean, I know I'm taking on risk with that pick. And obviously that it's being underlined by now I'm worried they could sign a free agent. But
he can also be like, we even though the ACL injury wasn't as serious as Javonte's or Dobbins last year, we expect him to not be like full go 90% snap share right out of the gate. But once he is, like we talked about those weeks, you know, 15 through 17, just absolutely smashing, like Breece Hall could be just absolutely torching to end the season on top of being really good when he's, you know, fully ready to go.
Yeah. And it's so weird because like, I feel like the market almost prices it like it's like the weeks are in reverse order of importance. Like if a guy is like uncertain to play week one,
this is perfect discount for Breece Hall. Like be worried about him going down to a 55% snap share in weeks 1 to 3. And then if he's 80%, and 20 touches the rest of the season, that's great if he's falling to the late third sometimes.
Yeah, plus like it's known, right? It's not like it's going to catch you off guard. So, okay, like tackle on a Gus Edwards. Tackle on, like I sometimes throw on Leonard Fournette there. I'm like,
I mean, I think what's going to happen unless they add somebody is Saquon Barkley's first season after his ACL. He was like limited weeks 1 and 2 and then was like, bam, 80, 90% snap share. And Breece Hall is not quite to Barkley, in my opinion, as a prospect, but he's up there in terms of prospects over the past couple of seasons. So,
to Barkley for me either, but he's good.
And he's not too far off. Awesome. Yeah.
He's not too far off. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm drafting a lot of him. And I think in general, like it's interesting too, this time of year where like, I feel like I let my exposures get a little out of whack, you know, relative to what I would want them to be in terms of the final percentages. But I'm like, I know I can fix it later. So I'll kind of take like mini stands. So I'll take like a big stand for against a guy when I think the price is really off. And then I know that I will have time to even things out if I want to. And then I'll also get more information, right? So like yeah. the Breece Hall thing, like if he ends up falling to the fourth round or the fifth round after Cook signs or whatever, I probably won't take a ton of him at the reduced price. Cause I'm like, well, you know, I kind of have my bags packed. So if he hits it a big way, I'm good. And I just kind of have to eat that small loss. You know, but sometimes you get wins there too. You know, I had a ton of Anthony Richardson in the pre-draft period. Honestly, I wish I had been even more aggressive, you know? So you kind of, I don't mind taking stands that way and even kind of taking bigger stands at various months, like in June, take yeah. a giant stand in this way. Trying to think what other players, I mean, Treylon Burks is another guy who I like a lot, but now
DeAndre you're just getting screwed over left and right here, huh?
I really am. Yeah. It's been tough.
By the way, what's up with, like, I think Hopkins still has a lot left, but what's up with these like Hall of Fame veteran wide receivers going to the Titans at the end of their career? What the hell is going on here?
I don't know. Yeah.
Julio, Andre Johnson, Julio, Randy Moss. Yeah. The hell's going on?
Was Randy Moss on the Titans?
Yeah, he was.
Those Patriots. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I forgot that. Wow. Yeah, let me think about what other guys I'm really hammering right now.
Let me ask you somebody that I'm really high on, and I've been drafting a lot to start the process when he was like nobody wanted to draft him because of uncertainties, and that's Joe Mixon. Like his ADP is starting to climb now as it should, but like I still think it's too low. Like right now, I think he's RB17. He's going after Aaron, and again, a lot of this is also like I tend to be drafting wide receivers in this range, but like if I don't love. That's why I loved a lot of the drafts I started with, because like I was getting Joe Mixon as my top running back in like the sixth round. And I'm like, now obviously that's not happening as much because it, you know, it sounds like he's going to be the lead running back for the Bengals all season. But I look at Joe Mixon and he's going after Ken Walker, after Aaron Jones, after Jahmyr Gibbs, after Najee, after Etienne. I'd rather have Mixon over all those players. And I understand efficiency wise, Mixon wasn't great, especially given the fact that he faced so many light boxes last season and still was inefficient. But the Bengals aren't taking him off the field, in my opinion, for Chase Brown or Chris Evans or whoever. And the thing I love about the way teams are defending the Bengals lately, so obviously Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, Chase's rookie season just dominated. They had the most vertical touchdown passes in the league. Burrow is the most efficient quarterback in football on a ton of, you know, on leading the NFL in yards per attempt. And then you look at last season, so the Bengals faced cover two on like 27% of their dropbacks. In 2021, it went up towards the second half of the season. And then last year with teams understanding what was happening, it happened right away in week one against Pittsburgh. But according to FTN data, they faced cover two, pretty much any sort of defense with two high safeties. So cover two, cover four, cover six on 44% of the dropbacks. And like that forced Burrow to check it down more. And like, I think that's going to be the same approach for defenses. I mean, Mixon could catch 55, 60 balls. And efficiency-wise, I just hope he's a little bit better. We obviously know he has spike week potential from that Panthers game. So for me, like it's a little bit changing now because the ADP is coming up after, you know, it looks like he's kind of guaranteed to be the lead running back all year. But I think Mixon is still overall, if I'm drafting a running back in that range, it's definitely going to be Joe Mixon.
I get that. Yeah, I mean, the upside's certainly there. It's been odd to me because he could still get suspended, right? I mean, and people have just decided that's no longer a concern.
Yeah, like admittedly, I've just been, you know, we haven't, I'm just drafting him as if he's playing all year. But I guess that is still a possibility.
The charge was thrown out because there was some sort of procedural error in terms of how it was filed. And I believe the police officer was like reprimanded or something along those lines. I don't know the exact details, but it wasn't done properly. Well, they reintroduced it. So there is, I don't know what the situation is going to turn out as. I have no idea, but that is still hanging over the situation to some extent. And it could be a Kamara thing where, you know, last year you got this discount on Kamara, who's going in the late third and, you know, he played all season and it was really more of a 2023 issue. This could be a 2024 thing for Mixon. But that's one thing that's made me a little nervous as he kind of continues to move up. I'm like, okay, so we're just pricing this guy. Like there's no chance he gets suspended.
Sure. Like,
there is a chance he gets suspended still, but I don't know. It's hard for me to price that. So I take him occasionally, but I usually want a little bit of an ADP discount relative to, and it's tough to get because I think if anything, he's moving up.
Let me ask you a different player in that division who, okay, this isn't the player I'm talking about, but I need to preface this. Like, I like this player a lot, and I think he could break out this season. Oh, wait, it actually changed. Okay, so it did change. So Deontay's finally going ahead of George Pickens. I've been drafting a lot of Deontay, and like efficiency-wise, he's like one of the worst efficiency high-volume wideouts in the league. But also like where he's been going, I don't really care because he's been, what, seventh in targets over the past three seasons. And he actually, according to FTN data, he led the entire league in target share against man coverage. Like, he just gets open. And like, is he going to score zero touchdowns again this year? No. I mean, if he does, then that's just like, I would retire, honestly. If I had as many targets as he has 2 years in a row and don't score. But now it's starting to change. He's now up to, what, wide receiver 36, which honestly, like, I still think might be a little bit too low. I understand it's not a full PPR site, which probably adds to the fact that, and again, he just didn't score touchdowns, but you did say you weren't really as high on the Steelers offense. So, but like where he was going, like I was getting Deontay Johnson as like my wide receiver 5 in some drafts.
No, I like Deontay Johnson a decent amount. I'm about even with the field with him in, on underdog. I just checked, but I'm slightly overweight, but I kind of wish I had more because, and I'll probably make a point to take him if he's going to start moving up because, I mean, he does get open. You know, that's not a narrative. ESPN, they have their open score ratings, which use the player tracking data to figure out if these guys are open and not just on targeted routes, which is maybe an important thing, especially for Deontay Johnson since he gets targeted constantly. But he finished first in open score last season. Tyler Lockett was second. Then A.J. Brown, Tyreek Hill, CeeDee Lamb, Stephon Diggs, Chris Olave, Davante Adams, Brandon Ayuk, Justin Jefferson, Jerry Jeudy. I mean, I feel like it certainly passes the smell test in terms of, you know, who actually gets open at will. And that's what he does. I mean, he doesn't do anything after the catch. He doesn't always catch the ball even. But he gets targeted a lot, and it's because he gets open. And he's in an offense where George Pickens does not get open at all. So, and Freiermuth, I think, is pretty good, but he is a tight end. So, like, I don't really see anybody kind of coming for Deontay Johnson's targets because he's going to be the separator in that offense. I mean, Allen Robinson certainly isn't going to be, you know? So, he's one that I'm kind of glad you mentioned because I probably need to be a little bit more aggressive on getting some of him. He's going more in that like seventh round range. And he's one of the last guys in that wide receiver tier where you're like, man, this dude, I'm very comfortable with him as my wide receiver 4. Pretty quickly after Johnson, it's like, these are not guys that I want to be like regularly starting for me.
Yeah, and it also isn't even like the fact that he had zero touchdowns. It's not because he just had like minimal usage in the red zone. Like he got plenty of usage. It's just I remember there was one play where he was clearly in bounds. Like he dragged his second foot and they challenged it, reviewed it for like 5 minutes and still called him out of bounds. Like he just like that's just a random event of you don't see volume to that level. And
yeah,
not
football's
score.
Weird, you know? Yeah, there's like, some weird stuff that happens every year.
Yeah,
and not that he's going to be a touchdown dominator.
No, but he's not going to be, you know, Davante Adams. But like if he scored 5 touchdowns last year, like we're probably having a different discussion about Deontay Johnson's offseason.
For sure.
So
I'll mention another Steeler who I like, and he's kind of jumping up in ADP. But Jalen Warren has been someone I've been taking a lot of. And
yeah, it was super interesting with him because there was a point where like Najee Harris was not playing on third downs for such a long stretch last year.
Najee Harris isn't very good. That's the thing about Najee Harris. Najee Harris isn't very good. He's entering his third season. And the third season is when we saw the Chiefs decide that, you know what, I think we're done with this Clyde Edwards-Helaire experiment. This just is not working. You know, after Leonard Fournette's third season is when the Jaguars cut him. He got plenty of usage in that third season. But, like, you know, first-round pick has not lived up to expectations. The third season, I think, is one where you might start to see things shift a little bit in terms of the team's approach. Like, they're not just going to keep banging their head against the wall if Najee doesn't look better than he has his first 2 years. And he's been very, very poor in terms of efficiency over the last 2 years. I understand that, you know, maybe some of it's related to some injuries, you know. I would definitely agree. Like if I was in charge of the Steelers, I'd be like, let's make sure we don't have anything here with Najee first before we like hand it off to a UDFA in Jalen Warren. And of course, I don't expect that they ever will this year, like hand things over to Warren. I think Najee will do his thing, but I think Najee could continue to lose snaps. We saw that he lost a lot of snaps from his rookie to sophomore year. I mean, he was like an 80% snap share guy as a rookie, and he wasn't that as a sophomore. And Jalen Warren, I think he's actually not that small. Like he's in the, I think he's like 215. Like he's pretty, he's got decent size. Like he's, and he caught passes well. So he's someone where I'm thinking like you're getting the contingent value bet and you're getting like, look, I know these coaches are stubborn and everything, but I think I'm getting the most talented back in the backfield. And I don't think it's a hot take to say that because Harris has been incredibly inefficient for 2 years. Like we just, because he was good at Alabama, he's good. Like, I don't know. I think at this point he needs to show us something in the NFL. You know, it's not a ton to ask. So I really like the Warren bet. Apparently the market does as well because he's moving up. But I like the general archetype that Warren has as well right now. Like I talked earlier about how we're going to miss a lot in these early drafts. Well, Jalen Warren is the number two in Pittsburgh. I know that. And I know with some confidence that Chuba Hubbard's the number two on the Panthers. I feel pretty good about that assessment. I feel pretty good that Devin Singletary is the number two in Houston.
I feel like nobody's talking about Chuba, by the way.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it at all. I mean, Chuba ran well last year, didn't get as much work as Foreman, but he was like kind of like a Foreman clone in terms of like their production.
He was undoubtedly the pass catching running back. And like, I understand they gave Miles Sanders. Yeah, and I understand they gave Miles Sanders a pretty decent contract, but like Deuce Staley, who has historically run committee backfields, is now the running backs coach in Carolina. Like they could do that with him and Chuba. And like Chuba had a ton of usable weeks down the stretch last season. So, and yeah, Jalen Warren, like he already last season played like 53% of the third downs. It was like top 20, top 15 among all running backs. And there were stretches like Najee didn't play. He played like under 70% of snaps and like more than half the games. Like, and the other thing too with Warren, you could talk a lot of time about like having a roster spot just go to waste. Like Jalen Warren doesn't have standalone value if Harris is there and like, and there is no switch at the position in terms of starters, but like he's not on the field. Like when Harris is active, like he'll probably get 5-6 touches and you could luck into some work. So like either way, right. Like he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be useless on your roster.
Yeah, and I think like in best ball, some of these guys like a Warren who's like, we have the information that he is the number two. And he, like to your point, he's going to have some snaps and he happens to score a touchdown 1 week and that hits your lineup. Like you get that best ball scoring bonus. But then the other thing about best ball is we don't have waivers. So just paying up a little bit for that information of, yeah, this guy, I know where he is on a depth chart. I think has some real value, especially early on when there's not that many backfields where we feel pretty confident about who the number two is. I also think that in certain backfields, Carolina and the Steelers would be pretty obvious ones. We're not expecting them to sign anybody because the Steelers are going to bring in like Fournette when they've just spent a first round pick on Harris. You know, like obviously I just made a point about how they might be kind of over Najee, but I think they're probably over Najee this December. They're probably not over him right now. You know, it's just that I think with a third season of him producing inefficiently, things could get a little bit, they could get a little, you know, risky for him in terms of his playing time. But again, that we're probably several months from that type of situation really being plausible. Miles Sanders just signed a big contract in Carolina. They're not going to bring in Kareem Hunt, right? So, you know, they're already kind of set there. So I think in cases where you're like, I feel good about this guy being the number two, I am confident that the team feels good about the guys in their backfield right now. They're not going to be adding any additions. And I'm not sure that the number one is really the most talented back here. I mean, Miles Sanders and Chuba Hubbard would be another situation where are we sure that Miles Sanders is better than Chuba Hubbard? Like, he probably is. But Miles Sanders, we were not really interested in drafting last year.
No.
You know, before he happened to be behind an incredible offensive
Miles
line.
Sanders has been, and again, you can look at the statistic in two different ways, whether it's like a vision kind of statistic or just straight up offensive line, but he's been like top five in yards before contact per attempt, like each of the last three seasons. He was like top seven in carries where he wasn't even, like literally wasn't even touched by a defensive player last season. Like, I think Miles Sanders is solid, but that offensive line is just like, it's just like, it's not even just like good. It's just like changes how running backs can just play football. It's just so seamless for that offensive line. And like Chuba Hubbard is, I think at least, going to at the very least play on passing downs. Cause Miles Sanders, I don't know what happened after Penn State, but he has completely fallen off in terms of pass catching. So,
lowest yards per out run in the entire league last year.
Yeah, like he was, and he had a bunch of really bad drops. He had like one where he like caught it and then fumbled. Like there were some really bad plays out of the passing game from him. So that was really, really something that I was looking. I was like, Chuba Hubbard is kind of like a really underrated zero RB kind of candidate, I think.
I agree.
So I like that call. Before we get out of here, I want to ask you about situations from last year. Like, is there anything that you're looking at from like, this team comes to mind because I just finished writing about them, but like the Broncos, where there was so much hype last season, everybody was interested in Russell Wilson. There was like massive, massive hype around Cortland Sutton being this. And again, I was part of it. I thought Sutton was going to have a monster year. And then they obviously were the worst offense in the league, but now you have Sean Payton there. There was a small two-game stretch where Russell Wilson looked like Russell Wilson. And really the only player that's even close to, you know, high draft pick in these drafts is Jerry Jeudy. Obviously, we have the uncertainty at the running back position. But like any teams like that where it's like we were wrong last year and it didn't pan out, but like if nobody goes back to that situation, could it be something we can take advantage of? Gabe Davis kind of comes to mind for an individual player for Buffalo. I think in best ball in these tournaments, those can be like really, really, really helpful kind of. And obviously because they let so many people down, like the Broncos and some of these players, the ADP has completely fallen.
Yeah, I think Gabe Davis is a really good one, especially because the Hopkins signing doesn't seem to be very likely now. I had a period of my ranks where I had to kind of bump Gabe Davis down because I was like, oh God. I mean, if Hopkins were to sign with the Bills, it would really hurt Gabe Davis. Because on some level, you are just kind of betting on routes with Josh Allen. But
I mean, I think you're still just betting on that even without Hopkins. But now, like, without Hopkins, he might, like, he could lead the NFL in routes if he stays healthy. Because he literally didn't leave the field last year, other than the ankle injury.
Yeah.
He just didn't leave the field.
Yeah, he's a really good one. I think Kyle Pitts is another one.
Yeah.
And you're getting a big discount on Kyle Pitts from where he was going last year. I mean, you can sit back at like the 6-7 turn and get Kyle Pitts. He used to go at the 2-3 turn. I mean, it's massive.
Yeah.
And that's kind of nuts to me on some level because, you know, I do get it, obviously. Like the Falcons could be really, really low pass volume. I do not think Desmond Ritter is good.
By the way, why does that Week 17 game have to be Chicago-Atlanta?
Well, because I think they requested that one. Let us end our season just running
at each other. Actually insane. That might be the fastest game in the history of the NFL.
Kyle Pitts had 2.02 yards per outrun as a rookie, over 1,000 yards. I mean, like, we're just going to forget that. That he produced over 1,000 yards as a rookie tight end, that he's basically a big wide receiver with tight end eligibility. It's just kind of nuts to me that he goes where he goes. But I mean, he's burned a lot of people. He was really, really hyped. I was part of that and it did not work at all. So, you know, he's not going to be a fun click for a lot of people, but I'm very much willing to go back and get hurt again. Cause it's like, how much can even hurt me on the 6-7 turn,
right?
You know, the beginning of the 6th even, you know, I think he's fine there. I would take him in the 5th if that was required. Obviously, since it's like never required, I don't do it, but you know, he strikes me as more of kind of like, you know, if he were to go where kind of Hockenson goes, that would make more sense to me just given his upside.
I think
like a semi-normal team.
Yeah. And I think like, how many tight ends in the NFL can reach 1,000 yards? Two, maybe three. Kelce, Pitts, Andrews. Like, Kittle won't see enough volume. Like, Kittle can do it. If Kittle was in the Chiefs offense, whatever, he would probably smash.
Yeah, Kittle's like, very, very talented.
But, like, in terms of the offense they're in, and maybe, like, Kyle Pitts can't do it in that offense, but overall, like, because he, I hope, runs out wide more like he did in his rookie season. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of Kyle Pitts. I just wish, like, I was more excited about the quarterback, but, Mariota had, like, one of the highest uncatchable pass rates in the league last year, so I don't know if it can get much worse. I'm going to ask you a player, and I think I already know your answer, because when you were on the pod a couple years ago during the NFL draft process, I was very high on Kadarius Toney. I don't believe you were.
I was not.
And I don't think you're going to like Kadarius Toney now, just because, like, there's really no value there for him, for a guy that's barely played. The hype's too strong, I feel like. Which
You feel like the hype's too strong?
Okay, so I feel like the hype is too strong for, like, that's what everybody else is thinking. I cannot escape the fact that he is going to get a ton of, like, if he stays healthy, he fits Andy Reid's offense so well with pre-snap motion and screens, because that's what he's great at. I just, he's probably going to play like 7 games. Like, if he plays, what, 12?
I don't think it's about the health, man. I mean, are you aware of how many snaps he played in the Super Bowl? He
played five snaps. Yeah.
Played 3 snaps in the conference championship game. 3 snaps.
They're saving them for this year. Yeah,
for what? For the 5 snaps the next week? 2 weeks? It was actually 2 weeks. So he got a week off. They still gave him only 5 snaps. I just, you know, if you count his 2 punt returns, he had 7 snaps. So there you go.
Hey, they were good. That's, they were yeah, a good 2 snaps.
They were good
too.
Punt returns. Yeah, I think he'll get used that way. I've found his price to be kind of nuts. Like, we're drafting him. He's had 8 snaps in his last 2 games. He's got a 7th round ADP. That makes a lot of sense, guys. Like, but I get it on some level. Where,
I mean, if the quarterback for the Chiefs is Chad Henne, like, it's a completely different conversation, obviously.
Of course. And if he just plays, he's going to be awesome. So yeah, it's like one of these, it's one of the takes that I kind of hate where he's priced, because on some level it is efficient, where it's like, hey, we know how high the upside here is, and you're going to have to pay for every single ounce of it. You know, you're not getting any kind of cheap Kadarius Toney upside breakout bet. You're going to have to pay through the nose. But I mean, I don't know, like the Hopkins thing is like, if Hopkins were to sign there, and obviously it seems increasingly less likely that he will, but even like the specter of it happening, I think was a reminder of how thin the bet is on some level with Toney. You know, it's like if Hopkins were to go there, like, man, I think Toney would take a huge hit. At least, yeah, with the other guys like Rashee White, Rice and Sky Moore and Marcus Valdes-Scantling, like they're all solidly double digit round picks. We're kind of treating them with, yeah, like the uncertainty that they deserve.
And admittedly, like outside of Kelsey, the player from the Chiefs I've been drafting the most has been McKinnon. Perfectly honest with you. So, I just, like, after doing the whole breakdown for the Chiefs, not that it's anything new, right? It's been Andy Reid's offense for years and everything, but like everybody talks about Mahomes, like, you know, highlight throws 50 yards down the field off platform, which obviously are amazing, but like this has been like one of the most screen heavy teams. Like Mahomes has been top 3 in screen attempts like each of the last like 4 years, and like watching with like they crushed the Eagles with pre-snap motion that Super Bowl, I think Toney would just be so good in that role. So I keep getting really excited. But then I look, it's like, oh, 7th round for a guy that, like you mentioned, played, you know, 7 snaps in the most important game of the season. It's like, I think Tony's like, I don't think there's an in-between with Toney. I think he's either going to be really, really good or just a complete train wreck.
Yeah, and I completely agree.
Like, I don't think he's going to have like a 70 catch, 900 yard, 6 touchdown season. I think he's going to be like really good or just, either he doesn't play because he's hurt, or he doesn't play because he doesn't get on the field, which would be obviously if he's hurt, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. And he's definitely going to be, because he's one of those guys where if you fade him, and I think I'm almost certainly going to be fading him just because I don't see the price coming down significantly. And mm-hmm. I don't see myself taking,
I mean, wait till he makes one play in the preseason.
Exactly. I mean, he's going to, I mean, if anything, yeah, you're right. His price probably goes up, but I mean, and it's going to be like pretty sweaty when he's making awesome plays in week 3 and looks like, you know, the next Tyreek Hill or something. I've compared him to Deontay Johnson, right? He's kind of like Deontay Johnson, but fun after the catch.
Yeah.
He gets open like it will. And he can play on the outside too. He's not just a slot guy. So if he's playing a lot, I mean, yeah, he's, and the other thing with Toney is that if he doesn't even need to play he doesn't need to run a full slate of routes, right? No. He doesn't need to have like a 90% route rate. If he's at like 70%, which is that's about where Antonio Brown was with the Buccaneers. And that could maybe be like a comp for like the sort of style of production that we're getting out of Tony. You know, he's coming in for certain plays. He's not out there all the time. But when he's out there, he just dominates targets, does a ton of stuff after the catch. I mean, I get the upside case. I really do. It's just like, man, I have to pay for what? I mean, it certainly wouldn't be full price, because if we knew, if we felt like really confident that he was going to be out there all the time, then, I mean, I don't know. Are we drafting him on like the 2-3 turn? Like, we would be very, very excited. So I get it, you know, but it's just like, man, the downside on a player like Tony is quite low. You know, the floor is quite low, and he could, when you miss on like a seventh round pick, like that hurts.
Admittedly, there is far more downside than upside, I think. Like the upside is for him to be like, you know, in terms of just an overall rank for wide receivers, like wide receiver, I don't know, 15 to 18 maybe. Like, but the downside is like he's like wide receiver
80. I think he could be higher than that. I think he could be higher than that. I think he'd be like wide receiver 9.
Okay. And especially because, like I said, when he came back and was like kind of slowly starting to be acclimated to the offense, from that point on until the Super Bowl run, like he was like among the top players in the league in terms of screen targets and reception. So like that role was already starting to be solidified for him, and now it's a full offseason with Andy Reid and Mahomes. So like there's obviously upside and an appeal, but
it is pretty scary. Christian Kirk last year was wide receiver 12 with 17 games played.
Yeah.
In half PPR.
Kirk was kind of used similarly, because he like obviously played in the slot, not as much screens, but he was used in pre-snap motion a lot, and he was using the backfield a lot. So that's interesting.
Yeah. Amari Cooper was wide receiver 9 with 1,160 yards and 9 touchdowns, 78 catches, 132 targets. I could see.
Here's the question too, though.
That kind of finish for sure.
Is he, after Sky Moore was an absolute disaster on special teams, is Tony just returning kicks for them? Not just, but like, is he going to return?
Well,
kicks?
I think Richie James might be
there. Right. That's what I was going to ask, because Richie James is there and he did that. And like, what if it's the inverse? What if it was Richie James that was just playing the full slots at wide out and Tony was playing?
A lot of people I respect are taking Richie James.
I don't hate that.
Yeah.
Richie James is good last year.
Interesting pick. Yeah. I was hanging out with, I got to meet Sam Sherman, who hosts ADP Chasing for us over on the Ship Chasing YouTube channel. And I got to hang out with him in person yesterday, and we just had him a couple beers, and I was like, it would be pretty funny if the key to this draft season was just Chiefs wide receivers. Like how, you know, that would be such a funny,
like not DeAndre Hopkins, but Chiefs wide receivers,
just Chiefs wide receivers. Like we've played this game. Like we've all played this game for like a while. Like we all think like we're getting good at it. And then the answer just turned out to be draft the best quarterbacks, wide receivers. And it was a surprise. Like that would be so funny.
Okay, so you're drafting, and that means you're drafting Gabe Davis then.
Yeah, I mean, I actually am drafting Gabe Davis.
But the funny thing about that is I was drafting MVS a ton last season, and now it's like just based off what we said, like, oh, I don't want to anymore. But like nothing's changed for him. He's not leaving the field on two wide sets at all.
Well, you're not a Justin Ross guy?
I mean, that would change things because Mahomes loves him now, so... But I don't know if he's going to be playing.
That'd be so fun.
I don't think he's going to be the number one receiver in terms of like playing time on a Pat Mahomes offense right away. But this is fun.
But I do think I'll probably force myself to take some Tony, and I'm mixing in.
It's scary to have zero
and Rice, and yeah, I want to be drafting all these guys because it would just be so classic if we just let every wide receiver on the Chiefs be a value because they didn't really do much last year. But I mean, so what? You know, 1 year off, it really shouldn't surprise us if there's an absolute league winner among these wide receivers. And Tony could definitely be even at his current ADP. So I'll take some.
And as much as I love him, like McKinnon won't have 9 receiving touchdowns again or whatever it was. Like that was just absurd. Real quick before we get out of here, I want to ask you this about the Broncos. Have you had any interest? Because like, I've been doing a lot of research, and The two games after they moved on from Hackett last season, they implemented an offense that fit Russell Wilson more. So I wrote about it, and it's actually really interesting. So Russell Wilson at his best, what does he kind of do, right? It's play action. It's, you know, getting outside the pocket. And for the entire season, pretty much, the Broncos just decided not to do that at all. I think it's a huge reason why their offense was so bad. But then in the two game, again, it's only a two game sample size of the games after they moved on from Hackett. So it's a little bit up in the air, obviously still a small sample size. But in the two games, so overall in the course of the season, actually, the Broncos, in terms of how often they used play action and how often they used any sort of pass attempt or passing rate where Russell Wilson was essentially rolling outside the pocket. It was like 27% for play action, and then it was like 15% of Russell Wilson's passing rate was outside the pocket. The last two games, their play action rate went up to like 35%, and Russell Wilson was outside the pocket like 20% of the time. And Russell Wilson played his best football. So I'm not saying that's going to happen all year. I also don't think Russell Wilson is suddenly the quarterback we saw all of last season. The offense obviously wasn't good. There were injuries. Judy's really the only player that's even going in the first like five rounds. But like then I also get the point where like that Sean Payton openly talked about how he didn't love the tight end production last season. Then they bring in Adam Trautman. I think they want to run the football. But then I look and it's like they have receivers that go late like Marvin Mims. Tim Patrick would have been like the player I drafted most in best ball last year before the ACL. And then Sutton's like wide receiver 48 now. I mean, you talked about the difference between like ADPs for Kyle Pitts. Like that's a massive difference from what we saw from Sutton last year. It was probably what like wide receiver 16, 17.
Yeah. I mean, Sutton was the guy that we decided it was going to be, right? It was like Sutton's.
I was 100% Sutton over Judy. I'm the opposite now, but like also there's a like wide receiver 48 is absurd. Now I'm saying, not saying it's not warranted, but just the difference from last year.
I don't know. I kind of feel like it isn't warranted, at least not entirely. Like Judy, so like the lesson we learned from last year, I think maybe should have been, let's not decide who's going to be the wide receiver one on the Broncos, because it's going to be probably somewhat spread out. And, it, you know, these guys will probably have their stretches of relevance. But like, I don't, you know, there's probably not like a clear top guy. I remember doing stuff in season and people were like acting like Jerry Judy stunk. And then he had a good end to the season.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, Jerry Judy's the man. It's like, well, what if Jerry Judy's just like, fine, you know? And that's kind of where I land on it. It's like, why do I have to take the most expensive guy here in this bounce back bet? I'm mixing in more Sutton.
Yeah.
Who makes me a little nervous when I take him, for sure. Like, I don't like taking Sutton.
I also don't love the receiver's net range anyway, though.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no real receiver.
And I have the exact stats that I wrote about. So weeks 1 to 16, the play action rate was 18%. The passing rate outside the pocket was 16%. Week 7 to 18, when they implemented the new offense, 34% play action rate and 24% outside the pocket. So, you know, 9% uptick in passing rate outside the pocket for us and a 16% uptick in play action rate, which if they can, I think Sean Payton said he like watched all of the games, all of the throws from Russell Wilson. And I think he was pretty much saying he wants to implement what he's done in his offenses in the past with what they did to end the season with when Russell Wilson was playing his best football. Hmm. And that would mean a lot of outside the pocket play action. And if they're taking deep shots, it's probably to Sutton, especially because I think Judy's going to be, again, not production wise, but like in the Michael Thomas, Marcus Colson type of role. So maybe I should start, after doing this article and stuff, maybe I should take some more Sutton. I don't know.
Yeah, I think Sutton's good. I like Marvin Mims a lot, too. I mean, I think Mims, you know, as a deep threat on the outside, he's a little undersized, but he does have the speed to do it.
His ball skills are pretty underrated, too. He reminded me of Dotson a little bit.
That's interesting. I not a guy in terms of the production metric stuff that, like, ever had an explosive season.
Yeah.
But was always, like, good. And true early declare, second round draft capital, I think is going to be able to get open. And Sean Payton is, you know, is the first guy that he's had a chance to draft. So I'm excited about Marvin Mims. You can get him pretty late still, you know, not as late as you could before, but he hasn't like rocketed up in terms of his ADP. And I think another guy that would benefit from some of those more kind of deep threat type of plays, the other guy, I'm kind of back in on Dulcich. I was a little nervous about what Payton was saying early on about Dulcich. Just kind of, he was kind of doing the like the, oh yeah, I think I heard of him. And that's not what you want to hear when the new coach comes in and then he gets
player, you know, player on my football team that I coach. Yeah, I've heard of him.
Yeah, exactly. And then OTAs, the tune changed a little bit. It seems like he's actually legitimately impressed with what Greg Dulcich brings to the table. And is talking, they're talking more about kind of using him in kind of the, you know, move tight end type of stuff.
Yeah. So he had good metrics too. Like he had, like he took over the tight end role. He played, he averaged 75% of the snaps in 10 games last season, 5.5 targets, but he had almost an 11 ADOT, which was third, 7.8 yards before the catch.
He's a
reception
seam stretcher.
Was third.
He stretches the seam.
So like, yeah, like you may, like he may be on paper like the third, fourth option, but if he's getting, like, not many tight ends are getting more than like, not many tight ends are getting the Kelce, Hockenson, Andrews, Goddard type of usage. But if you're getting right. five targets in a game and three of them are 20 yards down the field at tight end, I'll take that, especially if they're emphasizing the downfield play action game more. I'll take that all day. So,
yeah, I completely agree. So he's been someone that I'm kind of back in on. One thing that I'll try to do is there's actually a couple ways that I'm attacking this game. So one, I prefer to play it from the Herbert side. And you can get, there's that pocket of wide receivers where like in the fourth round, it's like, I don't know what to do. Fine, I'll take Keenan Allen or Mike Williams, right?
I've been taking Keenan Allen like more happy than you, so.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a fine pick, but I'm never like that excited, but I click it a fair amount. One of those two guys. And then I will, you know, usually be able to get Herbert in the fifth. And then you're looking at maybe Sutton there, you know, but you don't have to force Sutton because obviously you can get Quentin Johnston, I think is a pretty nice value right now. Then you don't have to force the Sutton bring back. You can do, if Javonte falls a lot, you can grab him. If you need early running back points, you can grab Samaje Perine. You can get Marvin Mims later as a bring back. You can get Dulcich as a bring back. So there's like a bunch of different ways. And obviously for the bring backs, I'm talking about week 17 correlation for, you know, you can kind of play that game from the Chargers side, and then you have a ton of flexibility in which pieces from the Broncos you're bringing back. On no given turn are you really kind of boxed in. The other thing is you can draft Tim Patrick, I think. Mm-hmm. He's available in the final rounds. His contract really keeps him from being cut. I still think there's a chance they move on from a wide receiver, you know, if there's a wide receiver injury or something. Wouldn't totally shock me if one of these guys was elsewhere. Because they can't really cut Patrick. Patrick will be gone after the season for sure, but he's going to be there this year. And, you know, we'll have to see how he comes back from this ACL tear and everything. But, like, as a completely free bet that, you know, he's out there running routes in week 15, 16, or 17, I think, he's a big body dude. He could get in the end zone.
I'm not saying he's the number one receiver for the Broncos. All I'm saying is when Russell Wilson and Sean Payton were courtside at the Denver basketball game, Tim Patrick was with them. That's all I'm saying.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying.
Maybe he's just a big basketball fan, but that's true. I just think that there's a number of ways to play it from the Chargers side. You can't really get boxed out. So I like that. The other thing is I do worry a little bit playing it from the Russell Wilson side of things. Is my quarterback going to get benched? Because I do think if Wilson just stinks this year, he will get benched. I think they'll play Stidham.
Peyton
has made it pretty clear that he's the guy there now. And if they need to move on from Wilson, he has the green light to do it.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can't go a season and a half of what he did most of last season.
Right.
I would be shocked if he got benched. Not like if he's playing bad that he got benched. I would be shocked if he played bad enough to get benched. Like, is Russell Wilson like a top six quarterback in the NFL anymore? No, I don't think he's anywhere close to as bad as he was last season. That there was just no organization with that team. Yeah, remember how many times they would get delayed games to start the year? Their red zone offense was terrible. It was just a bad situation. So I'm kind of,
it would surprise me too, but I think it's at least like,
but I agree. If he's bad again, I don't think Sean Payton's going to say, okay, like it's Russell Wilson, we're not benching him. Like, I think he'll get benched.
The other thing you can do with that game is you can build it into other stacks that you have with, you can build that. Sorry, let me say that again. You build that stack into lineups that have other quarterbacks stacked. So one, I shared a lineup with one of the articles that I wrote for the site, and it was a Josh Allen lineup, but I built in the Broncos Chargers game as a secondary correlation there. I ended up getting Mac Jones as my second quarterback because I got kind of boxed out of quarterback two. So I have essentially only
Mac
one
Jones
quarterback.
Get benched?
Yeah. What? Well, that could be a problem. But you don't pay very much when you draft Mac Jones.
Right,
he's
yeah.
available in the final rounds, right? And look, if Mac Jones is hitting my lineup in week 15 or 16 or 17, that the team is probably dead. I need Josh Allen to have a really nice 3-week stretch for me, including a massive week 17 game. And so my only bet, the whole bet comes down to Josh Allen. Josh Allen has to be the man. Okay, so if Josh Allen is crushing, am I worried about Justin Herbert or Russell Wilson passing him? Probably not. And if they do, it's maybe by a couple points because Allen's having good weeks. He's a guy you need, you know? All right, well then why don't I take those receivers too and build in some additional correlation? Let me bet on another game to shoot out. That's one of my favorite ones to do it with. Another one I do it with is the Commanders and the 49ers because I'm like, I don't know who the quarterback of either of these teams
yeah.
is. I bet a lot of people aren't stacking this game up like it's a shootout because they don't want to have to figure out which quarterback to draft. It's like, well, what if I just don't draft either quarterback? I probably should be taking more Brock Purdy because things seem to be headed that direction. But you don't have to take anybody. You can, especially if you've got, like if you have Jalen Hurts, right? Are you really that worried that you don't have Sam Howell or, you know, it could be Jacoby Brissett by that point or whatever. You know, Purdy, like you're good. You're good at quarterback. You're putting up points at quarterback. What you want to be able to find is some additional games that are going to be also putting up points because you got a big lineup you got to fill out. And you got to fill it out with guys who are scoring a ton of points. And you want to do that by getting as few things right as possible. So just kind of betting on one of these games to shoot out that maybe, you know, doesn't require you to add the quarterback on, I think could be an interesting way to attack things.
Well, Pat, this is a blast. Appreciate the time. Again, make sure you please let everybody know about all the great stuff you're doing over at Legendary Upside, articles, podcasts, rankings, all that great stuff, because I imagine it's going to help a lot of people in best ball, but also dynasty, redraft, everything fantasy, really, honestly. It's not just one. You know, that's why I like all different sorts of fantasy, whether it's best ball, redraft, DFS, dynasty. Like you can apply things to all of them. So please tell everybody where they can find your stuff again.
Yeah, so what I didn't mention earlier is that I'm running a $30 discount right now.
Nice.
At legendaryupside.com/early. You can get a $30 discount off your first year there. Takes it down to $69 for the first year.
Also nice.
I do have these are very limited. So, you know, but if you're listening to this like shortly after the podcast is released, then there's a good chance that you'll be able to secure an underdog credit. So if you're drafting a lot right now, you may be interested in securing a $50 underdog credit, which you can get by signing up for a yearly membership. And then there's a form at the on the homepage under perks/Discord access on legendaryupside.com. You go there, you fill out a form that gives me your underdog username and the email address that you signed up with, and then that allows me to make sure you're signed up and send you the username over to Underdog so that they can give you that credit. But it takes, the whole process is very simple. It only takes about a week for the credit to hit your account. I only have a limited amount of those though, and they are nearly gone. So, you know, for a very limited time, you can take advantage of that. I also have a partnership with Spike Week where you can get 40% off a Spike Week yearly, monthly, whatever membership you want to do. With promo code LEGUP if you are a Legendary Upside subscriber. So lots of kind of perks right now if you're looking to sign up for the site. These are all kind of the Spike Week one's going to keep running, but the discount I'm only running through about another month, and the underdog credits will be gone, I think, in the next couple weeks.
Awesome stuff. Make sure you follow Pat on Twitter at Pat Corain. Appreciate the time. Always a fun time talking best ball, fantasy, everything. Best of luck in your best ball drafts coming up. A lot's going to change, obviously, so make sure you're checking out all the content, both at Legendary Upside, everywhere else, and, of course, at FTN. We just relaunched the website. It's a new format, new design. It looks sick, so make sure you check that out and check out all the podcasts, the DataCast, the Dynasty podcasts we'll be recording. We'll have an episode Friday for that as well with Heath Cummings from CBS. We'll be talking some players on the rise in Dynasty League. So thanks for the time. Make sure you rate, review, subscribe, all that great stuff. Until next time, this has been the FTN DataCast. Peace out.
Thanks for listening to the FTN DataCast. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. And follow the hosts on Twitter at APfeiffer24 and at LochnerNFL.